Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You found Sonic Effects. Listening to ideas that are relevant, particularly more so to masonry in Upper Canada, situated. The greater lens is always Freemasonry that reflects the nature of the craft in your area. Every area that Masonry has visited means that Masonry adapts to the local history, to local culture, but adapts it does. The flexibility of genius, flexibility of brilliant ideas, means sometimes needs to be stated to remember the sense of inspiration is quite curious, and perhaps not so much if you're thinking about the changes in the world since the 16th, 17th century. The world is similar in some ways as you and I are to the men that created and drafted the early portions and the genius of our work. Think of masonry in that pre-3-degree format, particularly as you're connecting with me and I'm connecting with you through a medium that didn't exist that many years ago. What, 78? When people like you and I got our hands on computers, they were out before that, but they weren't accessible to us. And the first ones that I remember sitting down to where I was learning coding was were cumbersome beasts compared to what we have today. Changed our sense of privacy and privilege and confidentiality. Masonic Effects is a testament to that. The material that we deal with here, up to a point, is accessible to the world. If there are, and I know there are Masons who approach this whole matter with umbrage, I can only say to you, let's put this into some accurate and truthful perspective. Who, except a good Mason, would sit down to plunge into this fanatic fringe. Well, they've been on our shirt tails forever. If you're a good scholar, you'll know that. People that have a cause and a purpose that will malign us and the because of our very nature. We have, up until recently, tended to be quite quiet about our work, which that kind of stillness creates a suspicion amongst people. That people need an explanation, always an explanation, so they can move forward. And we don't necessarily, we're not quick. Our explanation is by example. And it's hard. And it's hard. These days where we're being encouraged to make our mark on the world, and pronouncing that, this sense of celebrity we have not known before, competes for our time and attention. And yet we are working with principles that are pretty clear, but all the principles, all the symbolism, all the history and philosophy means very little unless it's expressed, unless it's understood. Yeah, well, that goes without saying. Freemasonry is about understanding yourself at the end of the day. And that, as the thinking goes, is a source of improvement. Here, give you a sample of it. Can you think of, just seriously think about what it's like to live with you? Seriously, honestly, could you live with you? Snappish, peevish, just such a delight. Don't kill the messenger. I'm just asking the question. We have a good program today, a time of reflection in Upper Canada, the poetry of John Keats. Yes, I know we've covered, had some work by Keats not so very long ago. Maybe it's because of, you know, he's only 4 years into his writing and publishing when he died, but we're going to share one of his more interesting poems called Bright Star. And the music, just music is sublime, that music that should never exist. It's a lot like us. We should never exist. Who in the right mind would have backed this gamble? That a group of men with a sense of no more than being able to express and cultivate ideas that examined the sacred cows of the day, examined the assumptions that accelerated that the new field in the day, in the time, you know, that 16th century expansion of the value of science. Well, these were cutting edge. These were the rappers. These were the new age, the punk rockers of the time. These were the impressionists that were insulting the civility of Parisian galleries. The new, always the new, and always the illiterate. I can't say to a person, but always the illiterate and the agora, ready to mock what they don't understand. So whether it was troubadour plugging his guitar in, scandal, or somebody dancing with swiveling, wiggly hips, scandalous, or a hemline that showed raised above the ankle. We change, and it's sometimes puzzling, isn't it? But we always change, you and I with it. Unless we have those conceits, or unless we're just a little bit blithering, the change is always worthwhile and brings the new. And we really don't have a choice except to explore. So join me, brethren. Good show today. We'll kick it off with a little famous music, John Coltrane. Of reflection, Upper Canada. Maybe the reality of Freemasonry is a shadow of the ideal. It would be harsh to think an ideal Freemasonry would be tolerable. Certainly, if we draw anything from the work of Thomas More, utopia has limits, and so too does Freemasonry. Accepting that it is not a distortion as much as a fact for those who struggle with becoming. Nice to think about, but to what end? Here in Upper Canada, we are transitioning from rough to polished, as always. Large lodges are closing in greater numbers than ever before. The membership is well into the winter season, to the extent that questions are being raised about the vitality and relevance of the ancient order. At some point, we can surely acknowledge that sense of loss has brought our natural state of caution to admit privately that we need something more. But what? It is apparent that we have opportunity to build and a taste for inspired builders to show their skills. It is paradoxical that we will need to remember those knocking at the door are unaware of demise. Should we be careful to ensure they are not introduced to our sense of loss? Perhaps visiting across a district could be curtailed. Perhaps it is a time to go to ground and not continually remind ourselves of the good old days that were what they were. Today has its own and a different pace, just like you and me. Comparing us as boys to us as mature men, a futile comparison. Change is less overwhelming if we take it out of the lodge. Change is what tomorrow brings. Change is about the seasons. Change ensures every new day is stimulating and challenging. Suggesting that quantity is quality may justify thinking that we are in decline, but are we? Was ever there a man who benefited from the experience of Freemasonry, whose character gained traction, who lived a principled life, and are we to say he does not represent the success of everything we represent because he was only one man? Reflection.
Thank you.
Jerry Mulligan and Chet Baker. When this poet wrote this particular poem, he knew he was dying. He knew he was dying young. He knew he was going to die soon. So it's an interesting lament in a way. But John Keats, influential romantic poet. Why are only some men, some people drawn to poetry and the other go through life as if it doesn't exist? Well, I guess it's like so many people, if we look around, that go through life without asking or examining their nature or purpose. And for some, the struggle to exist is enough in anybody's imagination. But even then, there will be that boy in a construction site where everything is rusted and oxidized around him, that will look at the errand of butterfly and be transported somewhere else. Just like the way literature affects some people. Remember when you were a child and you were reading these adventure stories, and we were transported. We were the pirate. We were on the pirate ship. We were digging up the treasure. We were in the battlefield. We were on our horse, riding with the wind. Imagination. And then for too many of us, that was taught out of us. It was taught that those kind of imaginings were unseemly and unimportant. That the real necessary function of a man was to labor, not to be thinking about his own intellectual needs or his emotional state. These were hardly mentioned or thought of. And when they were thought of as a weakness. Now we've come a long way, like we have in so many other ways with that notion of weakness. Everything, it used to be considered an insult if there was an implication. Are you saying it's in my head? Well, today, we know, thanks to a lot of very advanced science, that yes, it is. Everything is in your head. Everything. Except maybe stupidity. Yeah, everything is in your head. It all matters. And whether we feel resolute or not, we have opportunity. You start off one step at a time. Start off within your means, and then recognize that you've started. And along the path, you realize that if your goals are significant or small, they require patience. And the interesting part is to realize in a mature way that we will experience barriers. Ego is what it is. It handcuffs our value. Our human conceits, those things that about us that we just choose to believe or assert because we can, no matter how foolish they are or thoughtless they are. Conceits. What happens around us, little do we understand. We approximate. We start off as boys full of opinion. My goodness, full of opinion. Immature, untested, but full of opinion. And very rarely packed with any fact. But we're taught that expressions of sensitivity is a weakness. What do you think that's based on? Oh, it's based on something. What do you think that's based on? And when, as you're diving into that rabbit hole, you ask yourself, have we been manipulated? Well, listen to this and decide for yourself. And if we have that range of capability, and yet we're being taught, and it's being mocked, that capability, that skill, that sensitivity, is it all right to use it as a bumper sticker or a slogan so we don't have to recognize or acknowledge? Stoop down to smell the flowers. What do you do on vacation? Rush, 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 rush. Or do you have it in your mind that this is a break? This is for you. Well, your time. Your time to enjoy. Now, how do you do that? Petulant, angry, demanding. Oh, how wonderful to be in your presence. Or to embrace the harmonies that your order extols. Happiness. But what do you have to suppress to be happy? Is control of, you have to suppress your emotion. We're taught that. All of this is around us. It's all in the literature and material. We're taught. But are you curious to find why? Why is this? Why? The meaning. Why is poetry said to be the connection of truth about the world around us? Why? Why? This guy is the fellow that said beauty is truth, truth is beauty. Nobody's laughing now. But I know that there are men that would, not so much on their last day. If you've ever been with somebody on their deathbed, nah, I've never seen anybody mocking. I've seen people fearful, people that haven't anticipated those moments. People that were scoundrels. Guilt. Hmm? Too late. You know that expression when a person is near to their last breath and they realize it's too late? Masons don't have that. Too late now. You are supported and you are encouraged. And do you remember your obligation in the third degree? And so for those that are concerned about the exposure of ideas, every human being has a right to these ideas, every human being. Freemasonry does not ever once anywhere lay claim. And the privacy rests within your heart. It's the privacy of that experience. The secrecy of your experience? Come on. Of course, because it's within you. Now, John Keats was born on the 31st of October, 1795. He had, at the time, middle-class parents, but they didn't have enough money to send him to a top school. So instead, they sent him to John Clark's school in Enfield. And the school was progressive, and it gave Keats an opportunity to learn both classic literature and Renaissance literature, such as Spenser. And when he was young, he lost both his father when he was 8 and later his mother when he was 14. So he was orphaned at an early age, and him and his siblings were looked after by their grandmother, who also placed the family in a difficult financial situation. And he struggled with money throughout his life, you can imagine. But after he finished school, he took an apprenticeship at Guy's Hospital in London in 1815. And in the early 19th century, the job of a surgeon was very challenging in the absence of anesthetic and modern technology. There's only a limited amount doctors could do to ease the condition of patients. And this suffering of patients and people was a theme Keats would later incorporate into his poetry. And it was hoped this medical training would give Keats a secure career and a financial income. But in 1816, despite making good progress, Keats told his guardian that he couldn't become a surgeon and felt compelled to try and make a career as a poet. It was a decision that his guardians failed to understand because at the time there was little hope of making money from writing poetry. However, Keats was introduced to some of the leading literary figures of the day, such as Leigh Hunt, Percy Shelley, and the poet John Hamilton Reynolds. This enabled him to publish his first collection of poems, but they were not a critical success and sold very few copies. From 1817, John spent considerable time nursing his brother Tom, who was suffering from tuberculosis. In 1818, they went on a walking tour of northern England and Scotland. His brother's conditions deteriorated and weakened by cold himself. It was likely that John Keats contracted the family disease of tuberculosis. Despite the difficulty of his nursing his dying brother and suffering a series of financial difficulties, Keats began his most prolific period of writing. Based on the edge of Hampstead Heath, he composed 5 of his 6 odes. My heart aches and a drowsy numbness pains. It's the first stanza of Ode to a Nightingale. And that's when he met the great poet William Wordsworth and Charles Lamb. And in 1818, his great work, Endymion, was published. However, many reviews were highly critical of his immaturity. It was labeled by some, including Byron, as Cockney poetry, suggesting the poet used uncouth language. The poem you're going to hear today, Bright Star. Would I were that steadfast as thou art, as it is sometimes known. Probably the most famous sonnet. Eusebius is written in the Shakespearean style. He knew he was dying. He knew he was probably going to die soon. Gives an interesting context for this. As you sit back and wrap your fingers tightly around your favorite sipping, think about what was going through his mind. Would it go through your mind or my mind to try and express that anguish, that longing, that resignation that we were dying like this? Bright star, were I steadfast as thou art, not in lone splendor hung alive the night and watching with eternal lids apart, like nature's patient, sleepless Eremite, the moving waters at their priest-like task of pure ablution around earth's human shores, or grazing on the new soft fallen mask of snow upon the mountains and the moors. No, yet still steadfast, still unchangeable, pillowed upon my fair love's ripening breast, to feel forever its soft fall and swell, awake forever in a sweet unrest, still to hear her tender taken breath, and so live ever, or else swoon to death. I wish I were as durable and fixed as you are, he says. Not because you're alone up there in the sky and constantly watching the seas awash. No, I don't want to be unchanging and immortal like you and up there on my own. I want to be as unchanging as you are, but down here, my head resting upon my young beloved's breast. Then I could feel the rise and fall of her breast, and she breathes forever. I could always awake, and it would be sweet. I would always hear her breathing and live forever. Or if at all this isn't possible, then let me die, because it's not worth living if I can't do that. So he's dying and he's thinking about the woman he'd love, wanting that sense of permanence and listening to her breathe. You've heard a person with tuberculosis breathe, and so do they. It's a constant reminder of what's coming. Bright star. Thank you. more, more. How can you not like that? We've been stopping in our mind palace, in our lodge, and to observe the symbols around us and to try to understand them a bit more. There's something packed in each one, every one of them. How they apply to you or to me has a lot to do with the idiosyncrasy of you, your nature. You know, we may approximate between us. As we learn, there are similarities between all of us, similar desires and similar goals, similar similarities, as masonry does teach us to draw on similarities rather than differences. It should, if we think about it, give us a sense of confidence because we already understand the stranger. He's not so strange because we know he's motivated by things similar to what we understand deep in our hearts. There you go, the conspiracy theorists out there. Talk to me about that secret. Similarity. We have always been odd man out, but the bigger man is. The bigger man is the bigger man because what he's doing and thinking and how he's acting is odd. It's not characteristic. How do you be generous to somebody that doesn't apparently deserve it? And not a member of your family, or it's not self-serving. Always self-serving makes sense. Oh, we do that because it has something to do with our immediate experience. Masonry, oh my goodness, it takes us out of that. It bursts that bubble. Kicks us out of the narrowness of our individual life lived, the experience of that life lived, to look around at what's happening everywhere. Not just whether it matters to me. That's what does masonry talk to you? What does masonry teach you about that narrow sense of the world? What does it teach you? You answer that. You know. Does it teach you anything? Have you not considered it? Well, nobody's going to make you. A curious thing. We have so many answers provided, and the opportunity is slipping through our fingers. Every time a young millennial or hipster comes to our door expecting, the buildup is quite profound, and the experience often not quite matching that. But we have to think, we have to be smart about our business in that engagement. Nobody is looking for a drive-through solution, a philosophy of life. Timothy Leary helped us unpack that whole question. Can we expand the mind rather than through contemplation or meditation? Can we expand the mind chemically to reach this? And do we reach the same state of insight? Well, no, it became recreational, didn't it? No free ride, eh? You've got to do the math, do the work. But remember, there's a difference between what we understand and what we know. Oh. We step a further few feet into our mind palace and we notice more symbols, more and more and more. And do you want this honey-coated and Pollyanna-ed? Are we children? No, put both our feet on the ground as grown men, and then we see things unvarnished, including ourselves. Truth, huh? And as Dyer starts this portion, hence the third degree, that certainly gained my attention immediately. historically. The third degree is that mystical death, which bodily death is taken as figurative. This idea, mystical death, a figurative bodily death, is not expressly a Masonic notion. There, because we know there were other mystery, so-called mystery cults, who expressed similar ideas. Now, do you want to, if you're the antiquarians out there, will already understand this in their own way. But this is not so hard. This kind of secret is not so hard to validate if you have the time and inclination to do the work and research it. Now, Umbridge, now I know the secret. Cat's out of the bag. Well, nah. You're vulnerable because there's no context to your understanding. What do you understand? You've heard it. Explain it. Explain it. Without the temper tantrum, without the idea that you're trying to criticize somebody else, let the idea stand on its own. Yeah, see, let it stand on its own and explain it then, if you understand it because you've heard it. The third degree, just as bodily birth is taken in the first degree as figurative of entrance upon the path of regeneration. Before the allegory of the third degree is explained to the candidate, his attention is called to a retrospect of those degrees through which he has already passed, intended to give him an appreciation of the interdependence of the three. To the Mason who has given little thought to these words or to the connection itself, I think that would be a lot of us. To the Mason who has given little thought to these words, the only relative dependency and connection may well seem to be merely that the rules prevent you from taking the latter degrees before going through the former. You might appreciate the very slight explanation of the two previous degrees then given him, but it is very slight. In the course of the ceremony, unless the appropriate emphasis is carefully given, there may be no depth of meaning. In this connection and dependency is where W.L. Wilmshurst sees it this way. This is the emphasis, huh? I think my experience where the focus is on the individuals, not on the message. The individuals, not the individual receiving it, but the individuals performing the piece, and then expecting praise when they just do a terrible, terrible job. They distract when you stumble and don't know the work. You're drawing attention away from the performance. So here we're getting into subtlety. We're getting into the nuance of masonry. And truly, I think this is where it's within that nuance, where meaning is cultivated and where change and development in a man's mind and character is founded. The entire symbol is but one comprehensive glyph or pictorial diagram of the condition of a candidate aspiring to Master Mason's rank. As high priest of his own personal temple, he must have his own bodily nature and its very desires underfoot. He must have developed strength of will and character to walk upon this checkerwork and withstand its appeals. He must also be able to ascend the winding staircase of his inner state to educate and habituate his mentality to higher conscious states, and so establish it there that he will be unaffected by seductive or frightening perceptions that there may meet him. By the cultivation of this strength and the ability to establish himself upon the loftier conscious levels, he coordinates the two pillars at the porchway of his inmost sanctuary, namely the physical and psychical supports of his organism and acquires the stability involved in regeneration and requisite to him before passing on to that last and greatest trial which awaits him. In strength will I establish my house that it may stand firm. Man's perfected organism is what is meant by my house. It was the same organism and the same stability that the Christian master spoke of in saying, upon this rock will I build my church, and the gates of the underworld shall not prevail against it. During all the discipline and labor involved in attaining this stability, there has shone light on the path from the first moment that his apprentice's vision was open to larger truth. Light from the science and philosophy of the order itself, which his proving his porchway to the ultimate sanctuary within. Light from friendly helpers and instructors, above all, light from the sun of his own heavens, streaming through the dormer window of his billy mind intelligence, and slowly but surely guiding his feet into the way of peace. But now, the last and greatest trial of his fortitude and fidelity, one imposing upon him a still more serious obligation and endurance, awaits him in the total withdrawal of this kindly light. Hitherto, although guided by that light, he has progressed in virtue of his own natural powers and efforts. Now the time has come when those props have to be removed, when all reliance upon natural abilities, self-will, and the normal rational understanding must be surrendered, and the aspirant must abandon himself utterly to the transformative action of his vital and immortal principle alone, passively suffering it to complete the work in entire independence of his lesser faculties. He must lose his life to save it. He must surrender all that he has hitherto felt to be his life in order to find life of an altogether higher order. Each Mason should regard himself individually before joining Masonry as a point in space and time. A point, as the lecture tells us, is the beginning of geometrical matter, and the first degree establishes the extension of that point into a line. A line is the shortest distance between two points and may be regarded as symbolizing friendship. The second degree teaches the use of several of these lines in one plane to enclose a superficial area, a society or lodge or family. In the old lecture on the third degree, the question is asked, from what to what was you raised? From a superficial flat to a lively perpendicular, from the square to the compass, from a fellow craft to a just and upright master mason. Thus is completed a perfect whole with the introduction of the third dimension.
My baby don't care for sugar. My baby don't care for pleasure. My baby just cares for me. My baby don't care for cars and races. My baby don't care for sugar. I don't play. Sleeping daylight is not his day. And even on a tablet, even something he can see, something he can see, my baby just can't.
Matters. So it does our understanding. Don't be harsh. If we haven't been exposed to these ideas, how could we possibly take them into account? But if we're looking for that added plus part, there it is, right? There it is. Right with us. You can imagine if the people that had installed and invested, each one of us, had the understanding of the mood and atmosphere. It might be like where the Mind Palace has taken us around a corner into a lodge of high priests where they're knowledgeable. But think about the experience for the candidate, the difference between the pedestrian and the sublime. Well, it comes with effort. And part of that effort is the understanding that it is possible and the meaning. Well, now, I think, and during this transition, we've looked at the what, in part. We need to complete the plan. I don't think masonry is intact, but operationally, we can step it up. Yeah, I'm thinking about the future. as Masons tend to. Look at the horizon. What's over that? That day when we can, our mind palace will help us to find the plans for the grand temple somewhere in this million square kilometers that we call Upper Canada. So thank you for tuning in. I hope we've been useful and informative, and to send you away to commit those acts of random sonic kindness. Here's a little bit of the one of the foremost of minds in jazz, Thelonious Monk. Oh. Look forward to seeing you. And if some of you are at the annual communication, I hope we bump into one another soon. Fraternal regards.